It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
God Journey.
Hey, for real, I'm back.
Yeah, this time you are back.
I looked nice last week, didn't I? I had a good voice and I was more attractive.
Okay, hold it. This is going the wrong way for me. The person who was here in your place, yes, much more attractive.
Yes, she did a much better job of.
Well, I didn't say a much better
being
job.
Her.
More attractive. Being
yes,
her?
Being her. Being
did
her.
Do that. Got some great responses. Appreciate Sarah coming in here and doing that. It was kind of a last-minute thing we threw together to help fix a problem. But
there's a lot of wisdom in that lady.
And a lot of email sent to Sarah and I through this. Very encouraging to her that folks were touched by some of the things we talked about. And I think a lot of people were blessed to say, what, you mean my husband and I don't have to agree on everything? And really found some freedom in that, which is about time.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there is such entrenched ideas of the women are in a secondary role. And it's like, you know what? Jesus died so that his bride could become everything that God purposed her to be. And we don't see that kind of borne out in your average little family there.
And wouldn't that be a much more powerful image of what it even means to be, if you want to use the term, head of the household? Not, I get my way and you must support my journey, but that I exist so that you can be everything God's called you to be on the planet, whether it's your wife, your kids.
Just,
that's a powerful way to look at it.
Just think of the absolute revolutionary, powerful change that if people would change their focus as opposed to me and mine, and you sort of recognize that, hey, if you have, quote, any kind of authority or you know, role like that, it is to be used to advance others. Not your own agenda.
Yeah, it really flips the whole thing around. Everybody's meant to serve me. That's what Eve was about for Adam, her helpmate. She's supposed to just do everything she can to support his deal. And I just think that's so backwards from the way God thinks.
Yeah, I think Eve was a new and improved model.
Oh, well,
Adam.
I would say definitely improved and definitely new. So I guess we're not going to fight over that one at all. So you have a happy new year.
We did. I went to my happy place. I was skiing.
Your happy place is skiing.
It is.
Mine is in the funky God music.
Is
that's my happy place.
That's awesome. Mine's up on a hill. We were up in the Sierras. And had one beautiful day.
Just, Sierra Summit.
Yep.
Just, sun out.
It was
powder.
Yeah, it wasn't powder. It was just it was this simple little day skiing with my family, but it was just fun to be out there. And I don't know.
Cool. I spent 2.5 hours going down one of those runs on my butt and a snowboard. A few years ago, never tried to get.
See, it's not snowboarding; it's snow sliding. They ruin the hill.
Yeah, well, I'm not
they
doing
just
snowboarding.
Take out all the, yeah,
I'm not doing snowboarding again. I'm telling you what: if I ever do it again, I'll have some skis on my feet. But I'm not even hopeful that's going to happen. So.
Oh, I'll teach you, Wakeson. Yeah, I'm a little tired, but.
What, you call me Jane Wakeson?
Yeah, I did.
On the air?
Yeah,
it's okay in private, but my gosh.
I remember the story behind that. That's funny.
You know how many times I get called that a year? By 2 or 3 times a year, somebody.
That knows your
word.
Past.
No, it doesn't know my past.
They don't. They don't know where Jane came from.
No, a lot of people. Well, I end up telling them when it comes out because they're so embarrassed. They're sitting. I remember one lady. She was introducing me to her children, adult children who just come over, and I was staying in this home. And this is Jane Wake. No, and she. Then she was, because we had not met, she was embarrassed. But
just here to have a dyslexic moment.
So for those that don't know, when I was in 8th grade constitution class, my substitute teacher calling roll one day called me Jane Wakeupson.
And it stuck.
All through high school. You want to look at my high school yearbook? It's all signed to Jane. And now after this podcast, I'm sure I'm going to get emailed with Jane on it.
Send those cards to Jane Wakeupson.
Oh, man. I hope people are more intelligent than that, so I'll not do it. Hey, we finally got enough podcasts in line to do our third God Journey archive disc. So
for real?
We did. I finally got to think about the other day. Thinking, we could be about there. And so up from February last year up until November this year, through November this year, is all on a new God Journey
Archive
3.
That's a lot of talking, pal.
Boy, I look over this stuff. It's you know, Paul Young was with us for the Shack. Bob Stamps was with us. Kevin Smith did a couple with us. John Lanford, Stan Furth. We talked about free-range believers and the sin disease and the gooberliness of religion, the shame game.
Oh, my favorite.
There were some wonderful things that we stumbled into last year. So they're all still available on the website for free, so you don't have to order the disc. But if you'd like them on a disc and... and they're available now. That'd be the Archive Disc 3. So that's kind of cool.
Ooh, we're on to Disc 4.
We're working on 4 even as we speak, as a matter of fact.
2008 is going to be a cool year.
And we're also finished up all we need to do to get the God Journey t-shirts up and running. So
our conversation starters.
A conversation starter t-shirt, the Gratefully Disillusioned, the same logo we're using on the mug. We're now putting on
a couple
of shirts.
You know, the God Journey mug in my house? We have two of them.
Yeah?
They're the most often used mugs. And I'm typically the guy that gets the third cup.
Oh, so what are you drinking out of, Tinkerbell?
I just grab what's there, but it's just fun. I mean, it's fun. It's like, you know, where's a God Journey mug?
It is so, fun. So, like, yeah, and we got some people already ordering those. So probably when this podcast up, which is going to be late, I know some of you are saying, where's the podcast? Because it's 12:30 on Friday, and we're just recording it now.
Down to the wire.
And it'll take a little bit of time for me to process
we're
it
We're about
out,
to but. Get... the storm of the century.
That's what they keep saying.
Yeah.
3 to 6 inches of it's, rain.
Yeah. They said 8 to 10 in some of the mountain areas.
You building your boat?
I called Noah.
Did you?
Yeah, just to make sure that the animals were safe.
And they are?
Uh-huh.
They're good to go?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you and I both live up in the hills a little bit, so...
I do, yeah. No, we're going to get quite the dump. It's just...
But we're not in danger of flooding. It all flows down to the lowlands. So.
Yes, it does. That's our neighbors just below
yeah.
us.
Yeah. Speaking of neighbors, and I know this is neighbors kind of a long way across the world, many of you may have been hearing a little bit of the news of what's going on in Kenya.
Yeah.
They had an election there, and there's been accusations of fraud, and it kind of pits various tribal groups against other tribal groups, and they're very, very afraid a genocide may break out in this whole situation. Mm-hmm. And there's always some evidence of people being murdered and slaughtered. And I had a brother that wrote me about a year or so ago, wanted me to come to Kenya and do some speaking. He kind of helps with a number of church groups in the area and church planters and things. And I get a lot of those kinds of invitations. And most of them, there's kind of a deal in Africa and I think India. Invite a white guy over here, have him speak, and I don't know, something. They don't even care.
Draws a crowd.
Most times they don't even know who you are or what you do. So I always write back and say, what is it that you're reading on my website that you would want me to come and share if I did come? Because it's just coming to a seminar for leaders. Well, I figure they're not on my website if they're asking me to do a seminar for leaders.
I get all these people in Nigeria that want to give me millions of dollars.
Well,
do you get those emails, Steve?
That's all another story. Yeah. In fact, I'm still waiting for that to carry us through the next year financially. But anyway, so I've been – and they've had a good exchange with this brother. And I sent him copies of He Loves Me and the Jake book, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And they've just passed them out. And they're just begging me to come. And I'm praying about it. I don't have a sense of timing yet or when that's going to happen. Sarah won't let me go now, so it won't be any time in a couple of weeks. But anyway, so I wrote this brother. And I just said, hey, I want to know if you guys are okay, how serious is the situation where you are. And they're more out in the rural areas, not really in the city. But this is what he wrote back. And I was really touched by it. He said, I would like to appreciate you for your prayers, which has helped us up until now. It's kind of a little pidgin English, as you'll note here. People here are living terrible life, especially the saints. I know you have hearts that has happened. I know you have heard what has happened here during the election. Until now, things are not well. Many of our brethren have lost their lives. Their houses are burned. Many are wounded and their properties have been destroyed. As you know, I am the coordinator for this group, so we are responsible to this situation for our brethren who have also been affected. On my side, I am hosting 25 families, as well as taking some who are in the hospital. My home has become a home of refuge, where more pastors and church leaders who are affected have run for help. We have been trusting God to see the next day. Since we are in rural areas where security is not secure, the government is only taking care and provide for those who are camped at the marketplace and police station. So there's too much congestion at the market centers. We are only praying that God may melt the hearts of brethren in the U.S. that may strengthen their hand to our affected brethren in Kenya. What we need are blankets and shelter and food and drugs and other basic needs. And he asked us to be in prayer about it, and if there's anything we could do to help, they would be blessed by it. Wow. Can you imagine the life we live and the life these brothers and sisters of ours are living in Kenya today?
No, I don't think we really can. I mean, I think, you know, if you've traveled outside the U.S. and you've been some of those places, I think perhaps you have a touchstone for understanding it. But even then, until you're faced with your own survival on a day-to-day dynamic, not sure what's going to happen, the lawlessness that's just rampant out there.
Well, because of all of this, I mean, I've been really tuned into the Kenya thing because he and I have been in this dialogue for the last year, and I'm thinking about going over there at some point. So, man, as I read his letter, I was just deeply touched. It's the first person connection I have, not just an organization to send money to. And I know Sarah and I are going to be involved in doing this. And I just wondered if others from the God Journey, what do you think of just saying to others, hey, do you guys want to help us?
I want to put it out there because I sort of feel like when you get a letter like that and somehow it's not some manipulative ploy, it's just a genuine plea.
Yeah.
To let that go unanswered, I don't know, seems kind of wrong.
It books that whole Jane thing, yeah, right back and say, you know, we'll be praying for you. Seems really hollow, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're warmed, be fed, be filled.
It's not manipulative or guilt-laden. It's just more, this is a genuine need. And here's something that if we have the ability and the means to do it, then by all means, let's do that. Let's marshal whatever capacity we have to assist them.
Well, I'm not sure how best to get the money there. I'm kind of talking to him about how we would do a bank transfer or send it through your Nigerian contacts or whatever we would do to get it there. But I think it'd be great if any of us that are listening to this podcast and you'd say, you know what, I've got some money. I'd like to help brothers and sisters in this. What we're going to do is start a fund at Lifestream Ministry. So you can send it to Lifestream and you can earmark it for Kenya. Every dime you send marked Kenya. We'll get to Kenya some way. We'll try and do it through this brother. If not, we'll work through other organizations. But I will make sure that every dime you send us for this, we'll get there. And you can do that. You can just go to the God Journey. There's a supporters page, and you can make a donation there. Go ahead and click that donation button. It'll take you to PayPal. You can use credit card, whatever. Just on the line, designate it for Kenya so that we'll know that's where you want it to go. And, if a bunch of us would chip in some nickels and dimes and some dollars, we'll find a way to get it to some brothers and sisters who really need it. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you know, I think so oftentimes, you know, how do you go about addressing these kinds? We're not going to be able to solve the unrest in Kenya, but we can help some brothers and sisters who are being greatly challenged by it.
With some of the most blanket,
just
food,
basic needs,
some shelter
for life and necessity,
medical drugs, yeah.
And I sort of feel like, you know, when you can get overwhelmed looking at the world situations, but when you have something tangible, there's just a context of, you know what, there's relationship here, and there's a clear step, there's a clear action that you can take. I sort of feel like that's where compassion actually exists, where it moves you to take action. Words are kind of empty. And you're just going, gee, brother, I'll be praying for you. Prayer isn't empty, but an unmoved heart. That's one of the things towards the end of the days, you know, before Jesus returns, is like the love of many will grow cold. I do think that that's one of the things he's going, like, gosh, Lord, do not allow that to take place inside me. I don't want to grow cold and apathetic in terms of my care for the people around me.
Yeah, and I think that's easy to get to when you look at what you said earlier about we're trying to take care of this whole. How do we fix Kenya?
You can't,
and you can't, and you get overwhelmed by all the need in Africa. You read all the African stuff and you say, "Oh, it's overwhelming, and I can't do anything." And I think that's how our hearts grow cold. Instead of saying, and this is what Sarah and I have seen our whole lives, God has put people in front of us for just the right season of being able to connect with things that we can get personally involved in, and not just write a check and give it to the Red Cross, as valuable as that might be. And I don't mean that. We've done that too. We've done that for crises in which we have not known people. We have given money to large organizations like that. But here people, I mean, we got involved in this outreach into Zuma with this AIDS group that I've done some teaching for, this group in Kenya, and people, he sent me pictures of these people. It's not just names on paper to me. Over the last year, he sent me pictures of various gatherings and meetings and things that they've done. And I'm grateful that at such a time as this, God's given me a link into that. Like I said, Sarah and I and Lifestream, actually, we're talking to some of my board today about committing some of our money that way, and would really love to invite. If it's on your heart, no guilt, no pressure, we're not going to show you any starving kid pictures from Africa. We're just saying it's in your heart to do. There's a way to do it. There's a way we'll get it there to Kenya for you.
Yeah, but I think the thing that I want to underscore as far as just the reality is, you know what? The enemy would overwhelm us with some big task that, frankly, God isn't asking you to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think you can just go like, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to start. And you get overwhelmed. And it's like, but you know what? If we're just responsive to the little things that are in front of us that you can do, that may be all God's asking. And it is very achievable. And it's an easy step. And I don't need the fear and the manipulation and the guilt of the big crisis that I don't have the grace
to
respond
to. Exactly.
But I can do the thing that's in front of me. And I don't have to. I get to if I want to. And I look at, you know, it's like life, if it's taken in those doses, it's easy. Life is not that complex if I keep in those doses. But, man, you can get overwhelmed by the fear of the what if, the overwhelming everything out there. And it's just like, you know what? I don't have grace to deal with that.
Yeah. And what I've noticed is a lot of time when God just gives you a next step to take, that next step can lead to 20 other next steps that's going to put you in places and take you places you would never have dreamed or thought of. And if you don't take the first step, I mean, for Sarah and I with Bridge Builders, it was go down and sit with Julie's principal and say, when she was enrolled for kindergarten, what can we do to help you? That opened a ton of doors through Bridge Builders that has allowed me to have some impact in public education. And this, but it didn't happen because I thought, I want to have some impact in public education and set about to go do that. It happened because you just take a simple step. This is a very simple thing, to just help some brothers and sisters who are being killed and bludgeoned and tortured to death in Kenya and help those who are helping those. That's a small thing, but you don't know what it can lead to. I mean, I told Sarah, I'm probably going to end up in Kenya now fairly soon, just because I think that's the way God works. I think God just takes you a step at a time.
Well, I think of how beautiful it is for a year prior to what's happening now, for God to actually be at work to create a potential lifeline of help and assistance that's a genuine relationship.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know, you get some little random letter that's, you know, in an email. It's like, well, you can completely disregard that, and you have no idea. And you'd be wise to be suspicious of those things.
Yep.
But where genuine relationship, where God has been at work already, it's just fun to sit back and go like, gosh, Lord, you've been caring for these people for a while. And you've been preparing for, you know, whatever for a while. This is just natural. And it's a normal response. And I think, you know, I've just learned to be able to take one step at a time. And I'm a chess player, so I love thinking strategically. I love, you know, thinking moves ahead and all that other stuff.
I can imagine you skiing down
hillside. I'm a great chess player.
Really?
Yeah, I
thought you were too
ADD. I was raised by a chess master.
I thought you were too ADD for chess.
No, I don't have ADD.
Oh, okay.
I'm multitasking. I'm just going too fast.
You fly.
I do.
Yeah.
But the reality is to try to manage life at that, I don't think you can, because you're not dealing with realities. You're dealing with possibilities. You can't manage those.
Yeah.
You can only kind of get lost in your head. The things that are in front of us, there's grace for. There is God's ability at each point to deal with reality. And I think when you get rooted there, it's all very manageable. It's overwhelming if I try to step beyond that. And it's like, but you don't have to. That doesn't exist yet.
Yep.
And it might not.
And whether or not God really can do everything God wants to do in the world through relationships, through friends and friends of friends, that God can make a connection, but that connection isn't just coming out of the blue. You know, I get all kinds of stuff in my email box, people that want me to put a link on a website or whatever, and they give me their website, and can you read it, and can you look at it? And I don't have time. I really don't have time to read every website out there, even if people are on the same page we are about so many things. It's nice when I meet them. It's wonderful when I get a resource that is encouraging in that or illuminating in some way. But as far as being able to go and parse through a website and figure out, gosh, is there enough here that I can recommend to someone else? And I pretty much respond to people. I'm really convinced God works through relationships. And if someday you'll have a link on my page, you know what God's going to do? God's going to give us a relationship. Because I even have links on my page to people that I don't agree with everything they write or say, but I know them as people, and I appreciate their journey in Christ, and I love them. And so I don't mind saying, hey, here's somebody I know that might be valuable to you. But rather than just put up a whole bunch of links with people who I've never met and don't know, I really believe that everything God can do and the way God knits the body together is he relates people to each other through various things and ways. And that's even by some of the travel that I do and people that will take a risk and say, I'm going to go over there because Wayne's hanging out, meet some other people in this area I don't know. Those simple little steps.
Right.
Are things, that's the way God knits the body together. It is the way it is.
And the reality is, you know what, if you try to do this by like a principle, well, if I have a relationship, then I'll do this. And if I do it for one, well, then I've got to do it for all the others. You know what? You just simply overwhelm yourself and never do it. Mm-hmm. The reality is God will move on your heart. And, you know, sometimes people are wanting this, and they're both in the same situation. We're like, I have a heart to respond in this situation, and for whatever reason, there's nothing wrong. No one's done anything. It's not like an evil person. I don't have the same response. And I've learned to just give myself the freedom to go like, you know what? I'm going to respond to what's being moved in my heart. Is it always correct? I don't think so.
Right.
But that's the only thing I know how to do because I can't do it all. And I don't, and it's not my job. Yeah. I resigned from being the head of the universe.
Yeah, did you?
I did.
A long time ago.
I did, a long time ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why everything's, you know, sort of unraveling.
You didn't get fired from this post? You actually resigned it?
Either way, I'm done.
Okay, good.
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, one of the things we've been watching, the second season of West Wing. It was one of my favorite shows. My son has the second season, so Sarah and I borrowed it since there was nothing on during the holidays anyway. We wanted to watch some of it again. And one of the lovely lines in that, I think, the President Bartlett, who's in this particular series, they'll be involved in something very intense, blah, blah, and they'll make some kind of decision. You'll just say, okay, what's next? And it's really, that's done, let's go on. And I tell you, I see that so much in my own life, just what you're describing. God asks you to do something, you do it. When you're done, you just like I say, what's next? It's not that I had to start anything and I got to do this from now on and this has got to totally possess me for the rest of my life. It's just, okay, that's done, what's next? And that what's next, what's before you, and I think we've talked about this, I know, with relationships before. People are like, I want this kind of, I need to meet these people, I'm trying to find this kind of group. Look at the people that God already has in front of you. What is God asking you to do in those relationships? Involve yourselves in that, and they will lead to other things. It's not a matter of trying to step back and get it all sorted out, but I've got to find a group that I can attend that's on the same page as my own journey. Walk with the people right in front of you, even if they're not on your page and not on the same journey. Love them. Help them. Enjoy what God's doing in them with your life. Engage with them. That will lead to other things you can't even imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of goofy to think about it, but God doesn't meet me in some fabricated, wonderful set of circumstances over there that I've got to get to.
Yeah.
God That's meets good. Me in yeah. my own life. And is he going to use some future thing? Well, I'm sure he might. But you know what? You know where God exists? He isn't the I will be whatever I will be. He isn't the I was. He is the I am. He's in the present. He's in now. He's here. And if I'll dwell there, you'll experience his presence a whole lot more. I mean, I do. I love thinking back on things. I love fond memories. But you know what? God isn't back there in my past. And the fear of, or the future, the what if, I mean, you can get yourself so tangled in a little pretzel ball that, and it's like, you know what, God, he'll be there with you now, but right now where he's at, all I have to deal with is what's in front of me now. And so few people live life there.
And that's more than enough.
Yeah.
You know, because we keep thinking about, well, if I just get this to happen, if I could change this, if I could find a better job, if I could. We so live in the what ifs about our life. I mean, Sarah and I met with an attorney. I told you this already earlier, but we met with an attorney yesterday because, you know, we're trying to get that whole end of life stuff settled out. And
are you leaving, Wayne?
Eventually. Maybe sooner than later if I go to Kenya soon. But no, we just, you know, it's time. Since the last time we did a will 20 years ago, our situation has changed dramatically. Kids are older, grandkids now. So we just sit down with an attorney and start this process all over again. And what I hate about that process is you sit there and go, what if? Now, what if that person dies before you die? What if, what if, what if? And you go through a billion little what ifs, and I walked out there going, I know that's necessary, it's important, and you all ought to do it because you need to take care of your kids.
You should have a whole bunch of people.
I am, but that's something you should do, not from a godly sense.
You're shooting all over the place.
Worldly sense. I'll be king. Most people ignore that too long like we tend to do. But I tell you what, I don't think my life in Christ works that way. I don't wake up every day going, okay, now what if this and what if that and what if that? And I'm glad I don't. I wake up every day going, okay, God, what's next? And what do you have in front of me today? Who have I got to love? What are you asking me to do? And who are you asking me to do it with? And that's just fun. That's just more than enough.
Yeah, I mean, the whole dynamic of being a chess player, I have very highly developed skills of strategic kind of, you know, thinking and thinking ahead and all that stuff, okay? That's great. That is a nice asset and skill.
I'm just shocked.
But guess what?
I know you are.
And here's why.
Wow.
Because I don't think God's really asking me to do all that. Because I can get lost in that. And I can then take a whole bunch of things upon me that he isn't putting there. I can get so burdened and overwhelmed with that aspect that I've sort of recognized he's asking me to kind of shift out of those gears that I was in for so long and just be responsive to what's happening now. You know, it's like live in the moment where it's like it doesn't throw all of that to the wind. It isn't disregarding that.
Because there are times when God does ask you to do something that requires planning. I got that email from someone this week saying, you know, all this fly by the seat of your pants, God's only spontaneous stuff. And, you know, I'm a musician. And when I do something musically, I like it to be done with practice and to be a beautiful moment for everybody. And most believers just want to fly by the seat of their pants, throw it together. And I went back and I said, we're actually talking about two different things here.
Yeah.
I agree with you. When God asks us to task on something, let's do it to the best of our ability. What you're talking about is let's not what if the strategies of our own intellect 5 miles down the road. Let's not do that. But when God asks us to do something, let's do it well. Let's do it to the best of our ability. Let's plan. Let's practice. Let's get it right. Let's not just, okay, we just fly by the seat of our pants. We'll do a bunch of junky thing and just say, well, that's good enough. But I told him, I said, you know, as for fellowship goes, here's where I'm at. If I pay $250 to go to a concert, I'm expecting a certain level of professionalism that will engage me. Okay? If my family's over here for Christmas Day and somebody pulls out a guitar, or we end up around the piano singing or something like that, I don't have all those expectations at all. And I will have just as much fun singing around with my family, even some goofy songs and fooling around, as I would have at a big expensive concert. They're just two different deals.
Right.
And one's not right and one's not wrong. It's appropriate to the environment. And so I like that. Yes, strategic plans. A lot of things that we do, getting this podcast on the air, getting the Shack book out there, some of the other writings and travels that I do, those things don't happen without some prayer, some planning, some buying a ticket, going, other people arranging things. Boy, flying by the seat of your pants is not the thing we're saying everybody should. That's not the same as do what God's put in front of you.
Yeah, and I think of really just wanting to bring some practical application to the fact of how do you go about doing this. Those are skills and assets that God, I think, has given to me. I think that's part of the gift mix of how I'm wired. But I'm not supposed to be doing that under my own steam because I can get lost there. And it's a challenge to sit there and go like, all right, Lord, how do I approach today? If I know I'm going to go to Albuquerque, well, I can plan a route. I can plan the means to get there.
Now you got all our Albuquerque people excited. Are you going?
Yeah. but if I'm going to Albuquerque, I can make a plan to get there, and God's going to bless my planning with wisdom. But what happens if I encounter a detour? Well, in that moment, I'm going to have to shift and go, okay, this wasn't the plan.
Exactly.
And so how do I respond now? I think to really live life effectively, it kind of requires the both and, not an either or. One is not spiritual and the other not spiritual. It's a question of what's in front of you and what's needed to be brought to bear in that situation. And when you know what to do, well, for gosh sakes, don't be a goofball and, oh, I'm just going to wait on the Lord.
Yeah, and when God gives you something to do, don't just do it shoddy. Don't just make one quick pass at it and say, okay, that's it. But I think some of that do it to the best of your ability without being an anal, retentive, you know,
performance-driven.
Yeah, knucklehead. I mean, don't over-exaggerate it. But at the same time, if you write music, do it to the best of your ability. If you write words for people, do it to the best of your ability that your resource and time allow. Do what you do. Do it well without that whole performance-based, God won't take it if I don't do it perfectly. It's not that. But neither is it, well, you're going to fly by the seat of our pants and end up wherever we are. I'll just go to the airport and jump on a plane, and wherever I get off will be fine. It's just, one, you're not going to let us do it. But two, it'd be absurd. And three, I agree with what you say. You start out, God gives you some purpose and plan, and you think you know what it is. And I, boy, a million times in my life, I've started out for something. And detours and roadblocks kept reshaping that into something that I didn't realize that's what I was headed for. Turned out at the end to fulfill the vision far more than what I thought it was as I projected out. So there is that flexibility to respond to the moment, and God uses that to keep shaping. But by all means, do what you do. Do it well.
Yeah, I just noticed the contrast of, you know, I'm wired one way, and yet that wiring prevented me from knowing how to respond oftentimes in the moment. If I didn't have my plan, or I didn't, you know, foresee this, it was like freeze.
Or can't do it.
Yeah.
Just turn it down.
And
yeah.
And now there's more a sense of going like, because I recognize, I believe it's more of a both and. There's a sense of going like, all right, Lord, where is this going? And when I know, I sort of think there's just some maturation in reality that, you know what, he's given me the ability to respond in an area. Well, go ahead, you know? As opposed to be burned. No, go ahead. You have capacity there. When I don't know what to do, or I don't, guess what? Chances are he isn't asking something of me. I, at that moment, probably do need to wait until there's some sense of what it is. And I don't have to wait with the oh no, the anxiousness of it. It's more like, I think God speaks on a need to know basis. And when I need to know, there's usually is wisdom available if I'm asking.
But I already see the emails coming in. You know, that's great if you think you can hear God that way. But if you've never heard God, or you don't know what God's doing, and I it comes back to the same thing. There is no God journey without God. This isn't just our best plans, our best principles, our best ideas. That there is a sense.
And I'll see you at the end.
Yeah, and helping people, you've got to, with God, develop a sense of what it is that you feel like he, and there's a number of things that come together, but a number of things of what he's investing your heart in. What do you feel called to do? What do you have a passion to do? When opportunity comes in front of you, what's in your heart to do? And have a sense of need and opportunity, and none of those things of themselves control what you do, but all of them with him in your heart, making clear, go this way, do this. And like you say, if there's not clarity, I don't mind a lot of things. Say, I know I'm probably going to get to Kenya someday. I have no, so I get email every month or two from these guys going, can you come next month? I'm going, I don't see it yet. I don't see the time frame for this, and it won't definitely be next month because of other things going on in my life. But, and it's okay to say I don't see it yet. And when I see it, I'll make a choice. Before I see it, I've got enough in front of me now that I know God's in, that I just don't have time. Yeah. To deal with that.
And the whole ability to hear God's voice, I think that's something that is developed with confidence over time by taking action. Actually sort of swings
not
it back.
Not by going to the PowerPoint presentation on learning to discern the voice
of God. And not just reading
God.
A million books on it either.
Yeah, that's right.
It's by actually in the little moments going like, okay, I think I heard something. Well, how do you know? Well, that just might be me. Well, it just might be.
Oftentimes will be.
You won't know unless, is there anything that I'm supposed to do with what I heard? And if there is, then take action. And then don't just leave the results to the, oh, that was the will of God.
Exactly.
You know, because it might not, what happens? Can you do something wrong? I have. I don't know about anyone else. I have.
Me too.
Multiple times over.
Yep.
And I've been able to look back and go like, you know, I'm just not so sure. The fruit of what occurred out of that, I thought it was. I was sincere. It really was an impulse. I really wasn't sure exactly where I was from, but I had the courage to act on it. I don't think God's up in heaven like, oh, how dare you. I think he was jazzed with the fact that I just took action.
That's right.
Okay? But what if I didn't get it right? Yeah. So what? Like that. That's the prerequisite. You only score if you get it right. I sort of feel like, you know, the reality is, if I'm acting on what's going on and it's present, and with the sincerity of my own heart, whether I have that all together or not, it's, Lord, I'm trying. When a little kid starts walking, every wobbly moment of that tiny little effort, and when he lands on his little pamper, the reality is those parents are like, you don't just go, yep. Oh, you dang kid, you fell again.
Can't you ever walk right?
Yeah, I mean, so do it. So yep. It's like, you know, if you can have the humility to start there with that kind of sort of analogy of looking at it, you will gain the confidence to one day run.
And isn't that what Hebrews is talking about when it talks about having our senses trained to know good and evil? See, we've always thought, we'll figure out the list finally. That is a good act. That is an evil act.
But that verse, how do you have your senses trained? It says through practice. When I first read that, that was a eureka moment. I went, when was practice? Because I, you know, coach in basketball and all, you know, all this other stuff. It's like, well, I know when practice is. Well, I know what we do at practice. We actually work on things that we will use in the game. Well, when's practice? Every flipping day. Every moment that I have to simply go, God, I'm trying to live in dialogue with you. I'm not trying to go under my own steam. So where are you, if anywhere, in all of this? And how do I discern that? Well, one decision at a time, one judgment call at a time, one discernment at a time of,
yeah, and I like what you said earlier. It's not about sitting back and going, I'm really trying to discern, is this God, and, you know, getting all hyped up about it. It really is, well, this is my heart, I'm going to give it a shot. And you turn around later and you go, man, it's to me, practice to discern good and evil. I look back and go, gosh, that impetus that rose up in my heart, that was not God. That was Wayne's desire for something to happen. That was an agenda Wayne had. And people got hurt. And so I can step back from that going, okay, that, I know not to follow that next time. Now, I probably will, again, because I'm still learning the difference between God's little nudge in my heart and whatever agendas that Wayne's got going on in his life. And I think I've learned in the process, because there have been so many things that I thought were God that turned out to have Wayne's name written all over it in the end of it, that it really helps you go, okay, that whole self-indulgent, push my own agenda on people thing, I think I recognize that now a lot better than I used to.
Yeah, and if you never actually look back with some form of evaluation that isn't performance-driven religion.
Right.
If you never look back with the possibility that concludes, gosh, maybe that wasn't exactly on target. Maybe that wasn't really pure. Maybe it was a mixture. If you never have the courage to honestly assess, you won't grow in your discernment or confidence of your ability to hear squat.
Exactly. And if you don't actually do the act to begin with,
there's nothing to evaluate.
There's nothing to assess. Exactly. You've got to be saying, okay, if I'm going to learn to have my senses trained to learn good and evil, I'm going to begin to act on things that are in my heart. I'm going to find out some of those things were God, and I'm going to be blessed by that. And I'm going to find out some of those things were Wayne. Not so good. And some were just neutral, kind of doesn't matter.
And there's a lot of mixture in everything, isn't there?
Everything. Oh, boy, you bet. This was in Parade magazine probably a couple months ago now. I've had this around for a while. I love this answer.
This is literally torn from the headlines. I'm looking at it.
It's torn up. It's stapled together.
It's torn. It's
this column called Ask Marilyn, and it's this genius person that answers these little brain teaser puzzle things for people. And one guy wrote her recently, or actually it's a woman, it's Jean. She said, after finishing one of your puzzles, I was shocked when I checked my answers. They weren't even close to the solution. Do you get credit for exercising your brain, even if the answer is wrong? Which is just a great question. What she's asking is, have you improved anything by using your brain, even if you couldn't get to the right answer? And her answer is one phrase. Sure, you're training your brain, not testing it. When I read that, truth in strange places.
Wow.
How much of my overlay in religion was always about, and the language was all about, God's testing you. This is a test from God. This is God's test. I mean, I thought of God like, you know, your sixth grade teacher who's, okay, here's another test. We're going to see how well you
are. Is this on
the test? Yeah, there's another question.
Is this on the test?
I
have no time for this. Unless it's
here. Yeah, that's another question. But the whole idea of a test is we're always being evaluated to see if we measure up. And what I loved about here's one of the, a genius caliber woman who is saying working on brain teasers is not about getting it right. It's about training your brain to think and to work. And there's value in it, even if you get the wrong answer. And we get to Hebrews 12, where God talks about
that
training.
Is so far askew from religion.
And it is so.
You get no points unless you get the right answer.
Exactly. You're just dead wrong.
And if you're wrong, you're going to hell.
And I think this, yeah, the ultimate wrong. But this was such, to me, this, you going back to Hebrews 12 about God chastising us, God disciplining those he loves. This is what it's talking about. It's talking about God training you to know the way in which he works so that you can be with him. This is not about God. I'm going to throw a test in your life today. I'm going to have a driver cut you off in traffic just to see if your anger is still in your heart. And just all the dumb ways we've extrapolated that to, you know, missing all the stoplights. And, well, God's just testing you today. We took God and we crammed him into this horrible little thing that isn't about training us to love him and live in him. It's about God that just can't wait to make your life miserable so he can check on your attitude. And God is so not like that.
I'm just thinking, what is the biggest cause of inaction in for most folks? I would postulate it's the fear of getting it wrong. Because I'm not sure that it's the right thing to do, I'm not going to do anything.
And being wrong is everything in religion. If you're wrong, that's serious stuff.
Yeah, but it leads to such apathetic inaction. It's sort of like a paralyzing fear.
It is incredibly that.
And it's like, gosh, if you don't have the freedom to get it wrong, you're never going to grow. Because you're hardly ever going to do anything. Because you don't have any guarantees.
Yeah. And we had some wonderful stuff we're going to talk about fear today. But we obviously are way over time. We'll get to it up the road. Maybe with Dave or some others. Because I think you're right. This is an important thing that we've landed on to get that sense that God's not testing you. He's training you. And that training comes in the practice and looking back at things with him and learning from what we can experience and grow.
If you're going to pull a through line out of this, it's like living with God in the moment and recognizing that everyday life is where we practice. And it's not unimportant. It's not like it only counts on the test. It's more like this is how you live and grow. And if God's kind of looking at us learning as little toddlers to be able to walk, that's just the one. I mean, I had an image one time when I was just, you know, one morning in prayer, and you know, I kind of said, God, you know, when you look at me, when you see me, what do you see? I just a genuine question. I saw a little kid in Pampers, and I was not really impressed. I didn't go, gee, thank you, because I'm thinking mighty man of God time, you know. But it was so refreshing to get just a little picture of myself as this little wobbly little guy with Pampers, because guess what? I needed them. And the grace that was in that picture of just realizing, I'm just learning.
And from God's side of it, then, he gets to be the encourager and the equipper, but certainly not always evaluating to see if it measures up to perfection.
When little kids try to first walk, he's there to catch you.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.